No Sheehan today. He's on a vacation for the next, well, better part of the next week. Batman is gone. Robin is stepping in, at least for a Friday. If you're a dork like me, I'm in my Nightwing era today. I got heavy metal Chris rolling with me, and he is enough of a dork that he got that joke.
The Dick Grayson.
Yeah, most people would not have gotten that joke, so I appreciate that heavy metal Chris did. We got a great show. We're going to get you ready for your fantasy draft. I know we don't talk a lot about fantasy on the program, but we will today at 11. Justin Fensterman, fantasyguru.com, and SiriusXM Fantasy going to jump on with us. Ben Standing will be on at 12, as he is each and every Friday, coming from Commanders training camp. Dan Quinn spoke this morning. You will hear some of what he said, including what he said about Sam Cosmi. We'll have a discussion about Sam Cosmi as well, because there's some interesting stuff that we need to touch on as it relates to him as we sit here as a fan base patiently waiting for that contract news, that notification, that tweet from whichever member of the beat that you trust the most to come across the timeline saying that Sam Cosmi has reached an extension to stay here in Washington for the foreseeable future. But we're starting last night with the Hall of Fame game. Now, the results of the game, who cares? I don't care. If you bet on preseason football, more power to you. I have been told by people that are smarter than I, when it comes to wagering, that preseason football is really where the bread is buttered. Okay, I'll take your word for it. I don't bet on the preseason. The game got called because of a severe weather warning, and they just called it what it is. So I don't really care about the preseason game itself. What I care about is that we got our first glimpse at this new kickoff rule. A lot of us have been really, really excited about it. Me, front and center. I have been wanting the NFL since I saw it for the first time last year at a Defenders game. I have been asking for the NFL, you got to take this rule. You got to take this formation for the kickoffs moving forward to add a little bit of excitement back into that play. Because when I was growing up, I grew up in the era of Devin Hester. A lot of you are a little older than I, shall we say, more life experience than I. You grew up in the era of Brian Mitchell. You got to see Daryl Green. I was not privy to seeing the good times of this franchise and organization, unlike you. But I grew up in the era of Devin Hester and Dante Hall and, to an extent, Brandon Banks and all of these guys that were really, really good at taking a kickoff and making something special of it. And for the past decade, really since Devin Hester retired, it feels like we've gotten minimal kickoff returns of any sort of real substance. They're always out of the back of the end zone. Touchback, let's just start this drive from the 25. First it was the 20, then it was the 25, and a way to incentivize kickers to not kick it out of the back of the end zone, and teams said, yeah, we'll still start you at the 25. We're trying to avoid these high-speed collisions. So what we saw yesterday gives me, a guy that is very much pro-kickoff, a lot of reasons to be very excited about what this new kickoff formation can be if. There is a massive if here. Not a but an if. I am incredibly excited for what this kickoff can be if a coach is smart about it. What we saw last night in the Hall of Fame game was not what I would consider to be smart about it. Watching just two of them, literally just the first two, it was clear as day to me, with all four of my eyes, clear as day, you can't have DBs on kick return. In a close quarter blocking arrangement that this is going to be, having a defensive back attempt to square up and block somebody is not the best way to create space for your return guy. What my hope is going to become is that as the offseason progresses, as training camp progresses, and we're at the time as it relates to the kickoff, or just offense and defense in general, but as it specifically relates to the kickoff, no idea is a bad idea. This has never been done before in the NFL. It's been done in the UFL. Newsflash, UFL, not as big as and important as the NFL. Things are different. Guys are faster. They're bigger. They're stronger. All of those things are accurate in the NFL. It just makes it a little different than what we saw in the XFL and the UFL. But no idea is a bad idea as it relates to coming up with new concepts that are creative and that, more importantly, are going to introduce the opportunity to get the ball carrier in space. That is priority number one, two, and three. You should be making the opposition kick it out of the end zone. Start at the 30. Because now the NFL is penalizing you. Not penalizing, but they've adjusted. It's no longer a touchback to the 25, it's to the 30. You boot it out of the back of the end zone, you only got to go 70 yards to go and score. You should be doing everything in your power as a return team to find ways to create space. And what my thought process was just watching yesterday, you got to find tight ends that can block, that can also move. You got to find linebackers that can block and also move. Maybe a couple of wide receivers. I mean, there are a number of guys on this roster that are really, really good at blocking. The problem is, like, Terry McLaurin is an example of this. Terry McLaurin is really, really good at blocking. I don't want Terry McLaurin on kickoff unless he is the one returning it. And even so, I'm hesitant. I don't want to put a guy that is as important to the success of the offense as Terry McLaurin is on kickoff when you have other dudes on the roster that can be just as effective when it comes to returning. When you have other dudes in the roster that can be just as effective when it comes to blocking. But that also makes it really important when you are deciding personnel-wise, do you want to keep five receivers? Do you want to keep six receivers? If you're on the fence and one of the receivers that you're potentially deciding with, and it's them or another position, maybe it's another DB, and you're kind of deciding, do we keep X? Do we keep Y? Who can block? And if that receiver, who maybe isn't going to get a ton of play time in just a regular offensive play, offensive set, offensive formation, but if he excels in blocking in close quarter situations, whereas that defensive back does not, and that receiver has a little bit of capability on the kickoff when you are the kicking team, which, by the way, if you have DBs, DBs are still very much in use on the kickoff team from the kicking team. It just, as I saw it yesterday, if you were the return team, there is no point in having a defensive back out there because they are not, it is not built in their DNA to be blockers. They are attacking the football. They are not meant to be, there's a large human coming at me. Let me try and hold my ground and make sure the large human does not run over me or get through me. That's just not what they are. So you can look at wide receivers and say, well, if you're really good at blocking, we are going to use you so we can create space on this kickoff return. But here's my crazy thought here. And I know this is super out there, but what I saw yesterday, if you have a guard or a tackle that is a silly athlete, who, by the way, what's the one thing that this draft cycle with Adam Peters and Dan Quinn, they have hammered home at every single opportunity once the draft was over? They got athletes. They looked at this raw athletic score, and they wanted to draft a bunch of dudes that were athletes. Now, again, I'm not suggesting you put Brandon Coleman on kick return. That's not what I'm saying. But if you have a backup guard or tackle that is super athletic and can very quickly seal an edge, all you need is a sliver. Because of the way this is set up, you're not having guys that are running the length of the field as a defender. We'll call him a defender in this. The kicking team is not running the length of the field. I often feel like it might be easier to run the length of the field if you're on the far side. You see the kicker or the return guy break into space, pivot, and then you can go run and chase him down. I feel like in this new formation, it's going to be significantly more difficult if you're on the backside of the play to then be a guy that chases the returner down if he does end up breaking into space. Just based off of the nature of the formation, you're significantly closer to where the ball is actually received. But in the nature of a guy breaking on the right side and you're standing on the left side, you have a considerable amount of distance that you have to then overcome. Whereas in previous years with the old formation, to me, it just felt like it was a little easier. So if you have a guard or a tackle that is just super silly, that can very quickly get to the defense, seal off an edge, and then there's a sliver for somebody, whether it be Mikey Sanner still, Jahan Dotson, Jamison Crowder, a Byron Pringle. I mean, take whoever on the roster that you particularly love at kick returner, if you can create them just a sliver of space for them to jet through there, it's basically them versus the kicker at that point. And I don't care who is returning for this team, week one through week 18, you name it. If it's them versus the kicker one-on-one, they better win. I don't know. You can run through them. You can run around them. I do not care. If it is you versus the kicker, you better win that one. So I'm really intrigued on how Dan Quinn is going to now take what he saw yesterday and just other guys around the league, but specifically to Dan Quinn. I am really intrigued and excited to see how he is going to take what he saw yesterday and then get creative with that. If you're the pioneer of getting creative on the kick returns and it works, you give yourself a massive advantage moving forward. And if you are looking at this team, you know, Kevin has them going 10-7. I am not that optimistic. While I have not ruled a 10-7 out, I think they'll be more in the realm 7, 8, 9 wins. But the deciding factor in some of those wins, if you're smart about it, could be a kick return. To shift momentum, to give you extra points that maybe you would not have been able to accumulate otherwise. If you are the pioneer as it relates to these kickoffs, you put yourself at a massive advantage. And that is the difference between potentially a 7-win season or a 10-win season if you really have that big of an advantage. I'm incredibly excited about this. Anything that you can do to make the game more exciting while also maintaining some semblance of safety, obviously we know it's football, you're going to get hurt. There are going to be high-speed collisions. That's why we watch it. There's a reason that none of us are glued to our televisions when the NFL is throwing up flag football. It's why we don't watch the Pro Bowl when the NFL throws up flag football. Yeah, I get the concepts of the routes are cool, but I kind of want to see someone get cracked. So we know you're going to have some sort of high-speed collisions, but if you can get your guy into space and you can get creative with this, that's a big-time win. So I'm really excited about this. I think based off of what we saw yesterday, it is a very, very positive thing moving forward. I do want to commend, at times, ESPN, because they had the first two, right? And this is the Hall of Fame game. They're getting ready for the Hall of Fame ceremony. Side note, apparently Andre Johnson is going to be the guy that is the headliner for the Hall of Fame ceremony. Congratulations to Andre Johnson. I'm also stunned because that dude literally made a career off of not talking. So he's now going to be the final guy that speaks. But he was awesome to watch for a number of years on a team that was really, really bad. Really, really bad. You know, the Texans were kind of like what Terry McLaurin has dealt with for a while. Now, Terry is not Andre Johnson, but you understand the similarities if you have watched some of the quarterbacks that have thrown the ball to Terry McLaurin. Andre Johnson was in a very, very similar spot for a lot of years in Houston. So I'm excited to see him get into the Hall of Fame. But they're doing these interviews with all of the guys, Andre Johnson, Devin Hester, and they were doing one with Dwight Freeney on the third kickoff yesterday, and there's a flag on the play. And I'm sitting there at home thinking, there's no way they're going to get past this. There's no way they're just going to skate past the flag on the play, because that's something that as a viewer, I want to know. What was the issue? Why was there a flag on this? What kind of, was it a formational thing? You know, I really wanted somebody to get flagged off of a formational thing just to kind of get a glimpse on how creative you can be with the rules, because it did look like at times they were almost, it didn't look like, whether it be Chicago or Houston, when they were set for a kickoff return, that they had all nine, mostly because they had two guys back, all nine guys right up on the line where you have to be. It looked like there were some guys that were maybe positioned a little differently. Maybe it was just the angle of their body, but almost as if to provide some sort of wedge, which makes sense. You're trying to get to the outside so your guy can break it loose and then go for six. But we got the flag on the play, and they're doing this interview, and they didn't really address the flag. And I'm sitting there like, you can't be serious. Like, you have to give us what that flag was. Like, Dwight Freeney is great, but we're going to see him speak for 15 minutes this weekend anyway, and that speech is going to be way more impactful than anything that he says in the middle of a broadcast at a football game right now. He's probably a little buzzed, having a little brewskis with his homies, you know what I mean? So, like, he's not going to give us anything that's life-changing on the sideline, and then they run a play, just a regular offensive play, and Joe Buck, this is why he's one of the best in the business, he goes right back to the replay. He's like, all right, this was the flag on this. It ended up just being a false start. Somebody, I think it was with Chicago, somebody moved a little too early. So real big round of applause to ESPN for doing that, because once that flag came down, you had to let the audience know what it was. If it's like just a regular false start on an offensive play in the Hall of Fame game, I don't give a damn. Ain't nobody care about that. But for this in particular, they did a really good job making sure that we saw it in a replay and then told us what the reason was, why this was what it was. And it was kind of like a very old school thing, because in the previous years, when it comes to kickoff formations, as soon as that kicker is moving, if you are on the return team, you're moving as well. So it was really good of ESPN to do it the way that they did it. I want to commend them for that. I thought that was incredibly necessary, and they did a good job with that. Again, Joe Buck is one of my favorite. I know people don't like him on the internet, but I'm a big time fan of Joe Buck. Throughout the course of the show, you can tweet me at the Denton Day. Our phone lines will be open at 301-230-0980. But first, Heavy Metal, if you don't mind, let's get to a what do you got. I have to admit, I was a little cautious as I'm sitting in for Kevin here on a Friday. Do I want to tackle this story? I was texting back and forth with a couple of my buddies. I was texting back and forth with people in the media circuit, and I decided this needs to be addressed because yesterday it was the biggest story really in all the Olympics. We go to the world of women's boxing. There was a women's boxing match between Iman Khalif, who is an Algerian boxer, and Angela Carini, who is an Italian boxer. This boxing match lasted 46 seconds. Khalif got one good shot at Carini, popped her right in the nose. She looks over at her coaches and says, I can't do this. After 46 seconds, she backs out. Immediately, you look at social media, the cesspool. The absolute cesspool that social media is. And we are getting hot takes flying left and right. What we know about Khalif, and it's not just her. There's another women's boxer, Lin Yuting, who's actually going to be fighting today. In 2023, they failed a gender test put on by the IBA, the International Boxing Association. So you jump to social media, and immediately you see the hot takes flying about how Khalif is a man. And I'm like, oh God, I gotta tackle this on radio. Like, how do I want to handle this? Well, I do the smart thing, which is I wait. Because I have found with situations like this, when you immediately jump to a hot take, you're doing yourself a disservice. You're doing a lot of other people a disservice. Now, I want to start with this. There is not a rational human being on this planet that thinks a man should box a woman. Let's get that out of the way. Not a rational human being that is thinking that. That is a terrible idea in every single facet. What I have struggled with in finding this is what the gender test was that she failed. I am not an expert as it relates to women's sports. You know the answer to this?
So I guess she was born with a Y chromosome, and for whatever reason, it's sort of like a... I don't know how to say all this on the air without getting in trouble or whatever, but she was born with lady parts despite having a Y chromosome. And so the Y chromosome is why she failed the IBA, the gender test. Yes.
So that is important because there is a lot of science involved to this.
This person, however, and this happens actually more common than people realize because most people don't get tested for that in their life and they might not even know. But she's, grown up a woman, is a woman by all. It's not like people are calling her a transgender athlete that was a man that is now fighting. And that is not true at all.
No, that is not true. There is a lot of science involved in this. And one thing about me, I am not sitting in this chair because I did great at science growing up. That was not exactly a good topic of mine. Creative writing, killer. Art, not at all. I can't draw for anything. History, pretty good at history. So I was talking with one of my buddies, and he's like big into the science thing way more than I am. And I was like, dude, I'm trying to understand like the science of this. And he's like, well, do you understand the science of this? And I was like, no. Well, he's like, well, then you probably shouldn't talk about the science of it on radio. And I was like, wow, that's incredibly smart. So thankfully, Heavy Metal Chris did. But that is an element of this that is very unique. And again, like this woman is a woman. She is not a man. She was not born a man. That is now transitioning to a woman. If that were the case, she would not be boxing.
In the last Olympics also.
She did.
And has lost multiple times to women as well. So this is not just like... They're making it sound like some big linebacker from the NFL is pretending they're a woman going in and boxing women, which is not the case.
This woman has had a number of fights under her belt in her career as a woman. What needs to be taken into consideration, which I find to be really interesting, the IBA and the IOC, which is the Olympic Committee, hate each other. There's a lot of beef between these two organizations, which I do think kind of plays into this as well. All of this woman's testosterone readings are perfectly fine. You mentioned the gender test because of the Y chromosome. Like, that is the reason that she failed a gender test. And there's another woman that's boxing today that failed the gender test as well because of that. I was talking with a couple of other people, again, just trying to get like a feel of what this is. Another reason that this could have been put off is because of certain medication that female athletes take as it relates to dealing with certain things in their body when it comes to competition. So I found that the outrage to this was significantly worse than it should have been. Significantly worse. I almost think that it felt like a little bit of a setup from Italy, because the athlete in Carini said that I would never pass judgment, I would never do all these things, but then she immediately quit. She gets hit in the face once in a boxing match. It was the hardest hit that she's ever taken, but didn't knock her out. She has a knockout loss on her career. Like, it felt like a very... It feels really icky. And it, somehow, the one that's actually getting the worst of this, she didn't do anything wrong, as I view this scenario. Because, again, she is a biological woman who is boxing other biological women.
This also happens in boxing a lot. I think the famous example was when Mike Tyson fought the undefeated heavyweight champion Michael Spinks and defeated him in 90 seconds in the first round knockout. Michael Spinks at that point was undefeated as the heavyweight. He never fought again. He was like, I've never been hit like that. I don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
And he quit. He ended his boxing career there. And nobody, you know, I mean, that happens in boxing. It's not unheard of for people to just be like, oh, I've never been hit like that. I'm not doing this anymore. Like, that happens sometimes.
It does.
Fighting sport.
Like. It does, but Italy was ready. They came right after. And by the way, not an international policy kind of guy, but just to put anything to bed about Khalif being a man that transitioned to a woman, she's from Algeria. I don't know what you know about Algeria policies as it relates to that. You can get jailed for that. It's not good.
They didn't even want women boxing in her country.
They did not.
So it would have been easier to not have gone this way if that's what they were doing.
They don't, like, trust me, they don't want this to be a conversation any more than certain people in this country don't want this to be a conversation. Like, they are not with that. So that should hopefully put a little bit of that to bed. All right, that's it. We're not talking about it. Don't call. You want to tweet me, maybe. Don't call about that. I just had to get that off my chest because it felt like it was a massive overreaction by a lot of people on social media. We're talking mostly football the rest of the show, including we got a snippet of Hard Knocks, and I think we're going to see a little bit of a shift from the mainstream media when it comes to quarterbacks. I'll explain that when we get back. Denton, I'm sitting in for Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980, and always on the free and live Odyssey app. Kevin Sheehan show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. He's on a nice European vacation. I was watching the Hall of Fame game yesterday. We did not see C.J. Stroud. Not surprising. We didn't see Caleb Williams. Also not surprising. Hall of Fame game, you don't see anybody. It's kind of designed that way, especially when there's only three preseason games now. But I do think yesterday marked a little bit of a shift as we enter the month of August, with yesterday being the first of the month. It's felt like this entire offseason that all of the national media attention as it relates to rookie quarterbacks has been directed our direction in our city with our team at Jaden Daniels. It feels like every day I get into work, Kevin will send me a text, he'll send me an email, so-and-so said something very nice about Jane Daniels, we got to go get that. I mean, how many times over the course of the offseason since the NFL draft have we played a clip on this show about this person at this network thinks Washington could be the next Houston Texans. This person at this network thinks that Washington's going to be the surprise team. This person at this network, all three different networks, three different people, but all of them that carry a little bit of weight, they're just lumping a bunch of praise onto Jaden Daniels. And to an extent, I like that. I do like the praise. But on the other hand, shut up. I don't want the attention coming to the quarterback here, because as a fan base, we know that sometimes if you give a quarterback a little too much attention, things go a little sideways. We found that out in the 2012 RG3 fiasco, right? Or I guess the fiasco was the year after 2012, but you get the idea. So there's a part of me that doesn't want anybody to talk about Jaden Daniels. And then by the time week one starts, he just bursts onto the scene as this big, massive surprise. But yesterday signaled a bit of a shift, because now I think a lot of that attention is going to move on to Caleb Williams. You know, Jaden was dominating that realm, but now it's going to be Caleb, because Caleb Williams is going to be so present on television moving forward, it's going to be impossible to miss. He played in the Hall of Fame. He was around in the Hall of Fame game. Didn't play, but his team played in the Hall of Fame game. And then in just about 3-4 days, you get Hard Knocks. And you're going to see a lot of Caleb Williams in Hard Knocks. And I want to see a lot of Caleb Williams in Hard Knocks. As it currently stands, he's like a little unknown. I don't really know much about how Caleb has transitioned from college to the NFL. I don't know what his teammates think about him. Do they like him? Maybe they don't like him. Do they think he's a leader? Maybe they don't think he's a leader. I know all of those things about Jaden Daniels. Everybody loves him. They love him nationally. They love him locally. They love him in the locker room. The coaches love him. Like everybody, Jaden Daniels, if we were just doing this test on paper, he is passing with flying colors as it relates to making the transition from college to the NFL. But I'm excited and curious to see what that's going to look like for Caleb. Now, we know in Hard Knocks, you can hide a lot of things. I haven't really watched Hard Knocks in years. I've seen the clips from the offseason one. Those have been fun, but after a while, it was kind of just guys doing the same thing. And the Giants are going to regret a lot of the stuff that they did. They're going to have to make up to a couple of players this year based off of some of the things they said on that. I don't think next year's offseason Hard Knocks, if it continues, which it's a money-making thing, so it will, that's not going to be nearly as raw as this one was. Whoever is selected for that is going to do their best to have a little bit of protection. I haven't watched Hard Knocks in the preseason, you know, consistently since the Raiders were in it, and they didn't show us anything about Antonio Brown. And I was like, we know the guy froze his feet off. How are you not going to show us anything about Antonio Brown? So I'm skeptical about what Chicago is going to look like, but I know that you're going to see a lot of Caleb Williams. And I'm excited to see him in this dynamic after it has felt like Jaden Daniels has just been dominating in the space. And I'm excited for Jaden Daniels to kind of take a back seat so he can maybe be a little bit of a surprise. But I brought up leadership. You know, leadership, as it, with Jaden here, he is, from all accounts, crushing it. I mean, the guy is, he is just smoking every single test. Guys in the locker room love him, so on and so forth. With Caleb Williams, we got a little bit of an opening on him being a leader. He's telling guys to pick up trash in the locker room, things of that nature. Well, that snippet of Caleb Williams telling guys to pick up trash in the locker room, that made its way to one of the Fox shows. I believe it's the Craig Carton show. And on that Craig Carton show is Amani Toomer. You remember him because he played for the Giants for a lot of years, played with Eli Manning, won a lot. We didn't like him very much here for those reasons, but he was less thrilled with the message that Caleb Williams was sending. Take a listen to this. This is like a 2-minute rant from Amani Toomer about Caleb Williams.
NFL locker rooms are still male-dominated, testosterone-laden, type A places where it really is Lord of the Flies. And this is just part of the growing up period for a quarterback who wants to be a great leader one day.
He's Russell Wilson 2.0.
Uh-oh.
This is not going to go over well.
Uh-oh.
If you came in the locker room, I've been in this locker room for 8 years, like you said. And you know, some rookie's going to come in who hasn't played one snap.
Right.
Talking, you know, we're wearing the fingernail polish. You know, now he's going to come in here and tell me, who've been here, who've been through the struggle, that I need to clean up? No, how about rookie? How about you clean up after me?
Right.
How about that? Don't give me this crap. I don't like it at all. I feel like rookies should earn their respect.
Sure.
Just because you got drafted number one doesn't mean nothing to me because I don't even know if you're good.
But I think he's trying to be, he may have even said it somewhat, you know, tongue in cheek, but I think he's trying to be a leader. He's trying to be that guy. Now,
Stop it.
I get it.
Stop. Just play the game. Prove to me that you're really here to be a star. Prove to me you're really trying to make this team better. Don't sit up here and talk about trash around the locker room. Yeah. Come on, man, please.
Now,
doing too much.
I would say this. Great leadership would be he just cleans the locker room up and says nothing. But here's the problem. I ain't your mama. I ain't cleaning up after you. Have some respect. Right?
I would be like, I'm cleaning up. The only way this is possible. Cleaning up. I'm like, hey, guys, you know what? I'm going to do this. Could you guys help me out?
Give me a hand.
Exactly.
Okay, that's
Don't
different.
Be like, go up to somebody who's sitting in the tub after a hard day of practice. You're a quarterback. Everybody hates the quarterbacks as it is because they get way too much credit.
Right.
And every
Can't touch them.
Like, Eli Manning won. Everybody hates the quarterbacks.
I didn't know that.
Eli Manning, oh, he won 2 Super Bowls. Oh, nobody else is out there. He's out there playing tennis by himself. So anyway, hey.
That Giants locker room when Amani Toomer was playing must have been filthy. I'm very confused with the amount of rage that fuels through him if somebody tells him to clean up. I didn't think it was bad what Caleb Williams was trying to do there. Yeah, you watch a locker room to be clean. God forbid the place that you're in is a little clean. We don't know the specifics here. But I was just very, very confused by this. This is hopefully not the modern day NFL, the you know what rookie, you clean up after me thing. That's a very strange way to go about it, especially with Caleb Williams. And by the way, if you look at that Chicago roster, that team sucked for like 40 years. I don't know if there's anybody in that locker room that should be taking the approach of, well, I've been here for forever, so you do my work for me. No. Y'all should be trying to become a winning franchise. To be good at football, which you haven't been for a while. I just found that to be a very massive overreaction. I don't understand. Like, I'm struggling to understand why that was the reaction that it was from a guy that played in the NFL for a long time. Maybe it's the fingernail thing. Like, he brings the fingernail polish up for literally no reason. I'm glad that Jane Daniels is not on the receiving end of this kind of stuff, and he is not the personality that Caleb Williams is, because Caleb Williams does do the fingernail thing. But, like, who cares? I don't understand why people are so bothered by the fingernail thing.
It's a generational thing, too, where it's kind of like, I don't know. I remember when I was a kid, and they're like, you know, you don't wear the same kind of pants your dad does, or, like, you know, things like that. And I feel there's certain things that are generational like that older generations just be like, that's weird. Why would you ever do that? And younger ones are like, yeah, first off, you hate it. That's why we do it. And secondly, like, you'll never get it, Pops. Like, that's kind of the point. Like,
yeah, I found that to be very, very strange, but also very, very grateful that, again, Jane Daniels has not found himself in a position to where he is getting skewered the way that Caleb Williams did for trying to keep a locker room clean. Big credit, really, to the Commanders for keeping a lot of that stuff in-house. Again, Hard Knocks sucks if you're a team. I understand, like, as a fan, part of me wants to kind of see behind the scenes with the Commanders, but at the same time, I know that not a lot of good has ever come out of Hard Knocks in its entire history. A couple of, like, viral things every now and then, but nothing good has ever come out of granting a a lot of access to people that maybe don't need a lot of access. All right, coming up next, it's Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. You can tweet me at the Denton Day. You'll hear a lot of what Dan Quinn said throughout the course of his press conference today later in the show. But coming up next, I want to play something that we did play yesterday that really leads me to believe that times are a-changing in Ashburn. You'll hear that comment from Dan Quinn next. It's Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, team980.com, the Odyssey app. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin at the Denton Day on Twitter. Justin Fensterman, SiriusXM, fantasygurus.com with us in 15 minutes to get you ready for your fantasy draft. You know, something that we've talked a lot about with Dan Quinn, particularly since training camp, has been the guy's effect on culture. We've had a lot of guests on this show, guys that are around the team, guys that have been around Dan Quinn in previous stops, all of whom have really hunkered down and hammered down that Dan Quinn is a master as it relates to building a culture. And I always thought that that's why Adam Peters and Josh Harris brought him in, because as much as a certain somebody once wanted to tell us that the culture was damn good, all of us that had functioning eyes knew that it was not. So I've been really impressed with the way that Dan Quinn has been cultivating a culture. And some of it was little stuff, like we saw it at OTAs and mini camps, a drill before and after practice that you really see a lot in like high school football. It's literally just guys running through pads, getting each other hype. And that to me is a very little thing, but it also does remind me of a time where football was fun. And I don't know about y'all, I could use some fun football in the district for the first time in quite some time. I've had it a couple of times in my lifetime, but not nearly as much as I would have liked to for a guy that's pushing 30 years old. So I could use a little bit of fun as it relates to football in this town. But Dan Quinn said something yesterday that was really, really striking, and I think it hammers down and really highlights the differences between the team now versus where the team was this time last year. This is Dan Quinn talking about guys communicating when they're not on the practice field.
Dan, obviously the practice tape is what is important here.
Yep.
How much do you pay attention, though, during practice to what the guys are doing when they're not practicing, when they're on the sideline?
Everything counts. You know, you want to see I think you're kind of referring to like culturally also, like, you know, how are they communicating with one another? One of the topics I had asked them in their own rooms a few nights ago is, how do you want your specific unit to be seen? And are you seen as that? Are you asking questions of one another? Are you pushing one another? Are you trying to get to new standards of what you can do? So those are the things that sometimes I see. You may see me pull a guy onto the field at one time. I might give him something that I saw, or I've also done it with the veteran player. Will you talk to rookie X and discuss this part of punt? Yeah, I got you, coach. So sometimes the messages from me as powerful the message is when it comes from a teammate, you know, where they're, I'm just always trying to push the connection between them. And the more we do that, you know, the more people are looking at one another to help them get better, where it's not just, you know, my eyes or my voice down, you know, to one singular person.
This is my favorite style of coaching, where you are confident enough in your ability to be the coach, but not insecure enough to think that someone else can help them get better too. You know, I heard this yesterday when I was cutting it up for Kevin, and it immediately took me back to this time last year. If you remember, we made a big deal of this on the show, it was a big deal on social media. There was a practice and Cole Turner got popped. He got popped, I think it was by Benjamin St. Juice. The player in question doesn't really matter here, but he got popped by a defender. And the defender stood over Cole Turner. And Terry McLaurin got up in the grill of the defender to kind of get him off. This isn't how we're rolling. And in the process of him doing that, he's getting yelled at by Eric Bieniemy. And Bieniemy is just tearing in to Terry McLaurin for doing, quote, dumb ass, do your flipping job. He ain't say flipping, but I did because I don't want to get fired. He's just lighting into Terry McLaurin as if the 30 seconds that it took for Terry to pick his teammate up was the life and death difference between winning a crucial game in December. And to me, for a guy in like, in Ron Rivera was a lot of things, but one thing that Ron actually did pretty well, I thought, was establish relationships between himself and the players. Wasn't a good coach, wasn't good with the X's and O's, even worse with the analytics. Like, there was not a lot when it came to Sundays that Ron was really good at, but it felt like he was really good at the relationship building stuff. And then to have the Bieniemy situation last year, where it felt like that was kind of tearing up some of the really good things that Ron had done, it's a massive refresher to see a not just a guy, it's literally the entire coaching staff, the entire front office, taking a vastly 180 approach to that line of thinking last year. Now, this is not to say they're not coaching them hard. Like, if you go out to practice, I haven't been to a practice yet just because it literally goes on during our show, and it makes it very difficult because it's very far away from us. But I am going to be there on Sunday. I'm excited about it. It's going to be my first and unfortunately the only one that I'm going to be able to go to this offseason. But I'm going to be out there on Sunday. And if you're out there on Sunday, one, come say hello to me. I'm the bald dude, likely with a bandana on his neck. But you'll hear a lot of guys getting yelled at because it's football. Like, yelling is a part of football, but demeaning is not. And last year, it felt like things were demeaning, whereas now, Dan Quinn feels like they're more uplifting. Where yelling isn't always a bad thing in the context of training camp, you know what's going to happen. As long as when a guy is on his backside, you're right there to pick him up. If that's what everybody is doing on a consistent basis now in training camp, if they are communicating in a way where everything is for the betterment of the team. I was there once last year, and I remember there was a little bit of a situation. Not a bad situation, but it was just a situation between offense and defense. Couple of guys saying some things to Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett didn't like it. The dudes were on the side of the field. It became a little bit of a situation. It was just like, it was to an extent like regular banter, and then it escalated really quickly. And it felt like last year there was always a very quick escalation process to going from just normal training camp banter to really button heads and getting chippy. Not a lot of fights, but really button heads and getting chippy. It feels like in the early portions of training camp now, the entire thing is different. The entire thing is different. And that's a big credit to Dan Quinn. The way they've taken the rookies under their wing has been incredibly impressive. You know, I just watched Commander's Log. I'm a big fan of the series. They put it out on YouTube yesterday. Not very long. It's like 16 minutes, but it really just is the rookies going around town, getting accustomed to what it's like in D.C. They took like one of the big bus tours. Yeah, I've lived in the greater Washington, D.C. DMV area for just about the entirety of my life outside of when I was in college and 1 year after that. Never in my life have I done one of those big bus tours. Not a single time. I did one in New York once. I've never done one here. Maybe I should do one here. I mean, they could be very informative. I learned about the history of D.C. constantly when I was in school, but maybe they would be very informative. I just thought it was kind of funny.
You going to take the duck boat that goes in the water?
I'm down for the water. The water to me would be more fun than the big bus where you're like sitting in traffic.
Well, no, it's a bus, and then it drives into the water, and you go up the river, and then you get out. Like, it's the duck boat, man. You
haven't seen that? They have one of those here?
Yeah. They did. I don't know if they still do.
I don't know if they still do. I would have done that.
Changed a lot of businesses and stuff. So
I would have loved to do that. Drive it and then into the water. That would have been the coolest thing ever. But I was watching Commander's Log, and that emphasis was on this feeling like a family. And I've done my best after getting just completely bamboozled, swindled, duped last year with Commander's Log when Jack Del Rio was excited as hell for the selection of Emmanuel Forbes. I learned from my mistakes, so I don't look crazy too in-depth into it, but it did feel very different when you had all the rookies saying, this is a very good place to start an NFL career. All of the guys that I was drafted with care about one another. I enjoy being here. Because none of them are from here. They all come from very different walks of life, very different atmospheres, and they're all coming together, forming a bond, doing things together. It's really, really impressive, and it's something that absolutely was not done in years past. And that needs to be commended because they recognize, hey, we have an issue here. We need to fix that issue. By the way, in this episode of Commander's Log, you got a very small, like 2 or 3 minutes, on upgrading the facilities. Because for like 4 years in a row, when you do that off-season poll about how the players feel about the facilities, just about everything in Ashburn was an F. You're getting Fs, you're getting F minuses, you're getting F plus. Maybe there was like a D minus or a D plus in there for something. But just about everything about the facility was completely torn to shreds in all these polls. You got a little bit on them revamping the facilities that make it feel like it is the year 2024 and not like 2006. Which it felt like that's what the facilities were for the longest time. So really big round of applause, at least for the little things, for the way this new management in year two, this is technically year two. We might be treating it like it's year one for Josh Harris. But in year two of Josh Harris, he is taking the steps necessary to realize things aren't the way they should be. Let's make them the way that they should be. All right, coming up, I'm going to get you set for your fantasy football draft. We don't do fantasy very often, but I figured now, as we sit here in the month of August, it is the perfect time. Justin Fensterman, he's fantasyguru.com, SiriusXM Fantasy. He's going to join us next year on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Dende sitting in on the Team 980, the Team980.com, and always free and live on the Odyssey app. Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, Team980.com, the Odyssey app. Dende sitting in for Kevin. At the Denton Day on Twitter. Justin Fensterman, SiriusXM, FantasyGurus.com, with us in 15 minutes to get you ready for your fantasy draft. You know, something that we've talked a lot about with Dan Quinn, particularly since training camp, has been the guy's effect on culture. We've had a lot of guests on this show, guys that are around the team, guys that have been around Dan Quinn in previous stops, all of whom have really hunkered down and hammered down that Dan Quinn is a master as it relates to building a culture. And I always thought that that's why Adam Peters and Josh Harris brought him in. Because as much as a certain somebody once wanted to tell us that the culture was damn good, all of us that had functioning eyes knew that it was not. So I've been really impressed with the way that Dan Quinn has been cultivating a culture. And some of it was little stuff, like we saw it at OTAs and mini camps, a drill before and after practice that you really see a lot in like high school football. It's literally just guys running through pads, getting each other hype. And that to me is a very little thing, but it also does remind me of a time where football was fun. And I don't know about y'all, I could use some fun football in the district for the first time in quite some time. I've had it a couple of times in my lifetime, but not nearly as much as I would have liked to for a guy that's pushing 30 years old. So I could use a little bit of fun as it relates to football in this town. But Dan Quinn said something yesterday that was really, really striking, and I think it hammers down and really highlights the differences between the team now versus where the team was this time last year. This is Dan Quinn talking about guys communicating when they're not on the practice field.
Dan, obviously the practice tape is what is important here.
Yep.
How much do you pay attention, you know, during practice to what the guys are doing when they're not practicing, when they're on the sideline?
Yeah, I think everything counts. You know, you want to see I think you're kind of referring to like culturally also, like, you know, how are they communicating with one another? One of the topics I had asked them in their own rooms a few nights ago is, how do you want your specific unit to be seen? And are you seen as that? Are you asking questions of one another? Are you pushing one another? Are you trying to get to new standards of what you can do? So those are the things that sometimes I see. You may see me pull a guy onto the field at one time. I might give him something that I saw, or I've also done it with the veteran player. Will you talk to rookie X and discuss this part of punt? Yeah, I got you, coach. So sometimes the messages from me as powerful the message is when it comes from a teammate, you know, where I'm just always trying to push the connection between them. And the more we do that, you know, the more people are looking at one another to help them get better, where it's not just, you know, my eyes or my voice down, you know, to one singular person.
This is my favorite style of coaching, where you are confident enough in your ability to be the coach, but not insecure enough to think that someone else can help them get better too. You know, I heard this yesterday when I was cutting it up for Kevin, and it immediately took me back to this time last year. If you remember, we made a big deal of this on the shows, a big deal on social media. There was a practice, and Cole Turner got popped. He got popped, I think it was by Benjamin St. Juice. The player in question doesn't really matter here. But he got popped by a defender, and the defender stood over Cole Turner. And Terry McLaurin got up in the grill of the defender to kind of get him off. This isn't how we're rolling. And in the process of him doing that, he's getting yelled at by Eric Bieniemy. And Bieniemy is just tearing in to Terry McLaurin for doing, quote, dumb S, do your flipping job. He ain't say flipping, but I did because I don't want to get fired. He's just lighting into Terry McLaurin as if the 30 seconds that it took for Terry to pick his teammate up was the life and death difference between winning a crucial game in December. And to me, for a guy in Ron Rivera was a lot of things, but one thing that Ron actually did pretty well, I thought, was establish relationships between himself and the players. Wasn't a good coach, wasn't good with the X's and O's, even worse with the analytics. Like, there was not a lot when it came to Sundays that Ron was really good at, but it felt like he was really good at the relationship building stuff. And then to have the Bieniemy situation last year where it felt like that was kind of tearing up some of the really good things that Ron had done, it's a massive refresher to see a not just a guy, it's literally the entire coaching staff, the entire front office, taking a vastly 180 approach to that line of thinking last year. Now, this is not to say they're not coaching them hard. Like, if you go out to practice, I haven't been to a practice yet just because it literally goes on during our show, and it makes it very difficult because it's very far away from us. But I am going to be there on Sunday. I'm excited about it. It's going to be my first and unfortunately the only one that I'm going to be able to go to this offseason. But I'm going to be out there on Sunday. And if you're out there on Sunday, one, come say hello to me. I'm the bald dude, likely with a bandana on his neck. But you'll hear a lot of guys getting yelled at because it's football. Like, yelling is a part of football, but demeaning is not. And last year, it felt like things were demeaning, whereas now, Dan Quinn feels like they're more uplifting. Where yelling isn't always a bad thing in the context of training camp. You know what's going to happen. As long as when a guy is on his backside, you're right there to pick him up. If that's what everybody is doing on a consistent basis now in training camp, if they are communicating in a way where everything is for the betterment of the team. I was there once last year, and I remember there was a little bit of a situation. Not a bad situation, but it was just a situation between offense and defense. Couple of guys saying some things to Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett didn't like it. The dudes were on the side of the field. It became a little bit of a situation. It was just like, it was to an extent like regular banter, and then it escalated really quickly. And it felt like last year there was always a very quick escalation process to going from just normal training camp banter to really button heads and getting chippy. Not a lot of fights, but really button heads and getting chippy. It feels like in the early portions of training camp now, the entire thing is different. The entire thing is different. And that's a big credit to Dan Quinn. The way they've taken the rookies under their wing has been incredibly impressive. You know, I just watched Commander's Log. I'm a big fan of the series. They put it out on YouTube yesterday. Not very long. It's like 16 minutes, but it really just is the rookies going around town, getting accustomed to what it's like in DC. They took like one of the big bus tours. Yeah, I've lived in the greater Washington, D.C., DMV area for just about the entirety of my life outside of when I was in college and 1 year after that. Never in my life have I done one of those big bus tours. Not a single time. I did one in New York once. I've never done one here. Maybe I should do one here. I mean, they could be very informative. I learned about the history of D.C. constantly when I was in school, but maybe they would be very informative. I just thought it was kind of funny.
You're going to take the duck boat that goes in the water?
I'm down for the water. The water to me would be more fun than the big bus where you're like sitting in traffic.
Well, no, it's a bus, and then it drives into the water, and you go up the river, and then you get out. Like, it's the duck boat, man. You
haven't seen that? They have one of those here?
Yeah. They did. I don't know if they still do.
I don't know if they still do. I would have done that.
Changed a lot of businesses and stuff. So
I would have loved to do that. Drive it and then into the water. That would have been the coolest thing ever. But I was watching Commander's Log, and that emphasis was on this feeling like a family. And I've done my best after getting just completely bamboozled, swindled, duped last year with Commander's Log when Jack Del Rio was excited as hell for the selection of Emmanuel Forbes. I learned from my mistakes, so I don't look crazy too in-depth into it, but it did feel very different when you had all the rookies saying, this is a very good place to start an NFL career. All of the guys that I was drafted with care about one another. I enjoy being here because none of them are from here. They all come from very different walks of life, very different atmospheres, and they're all coming together, forming a bond, doing things together. It's really, really impressive, and it's something that absolutely was not done in years past. And that needs to be commended because they recognize, hey, we have an issue here. We need to fix that issue. By the way, in this episode of Commander's Log, you got a very small, like 2 or 3 minutes, on upgrading the facilities. Because for like 4 years in a row, when you do that off-season poll about how the players feel about the facilities, just about everything in Ashburn was an F. You're getting Fs, you're getting F minuses, you're getting F plus. Maybe there was like a D minus or a D plus in there for something. But just about everything about the facility was completely torn to shreds in all these polls. You got a little bit on them revamping the facilities that make it feel like it is the year 2024 and not like 2006. Which it felt like that's what the facilities were for the longest time. So really big round of applause, at least for the little things, for the way this new management in year two, this is technically year two. We might be treating it like it's year one for Josh Harris. But in year two of Josh Harris, he is taking the steps necessary to realize things aren't the way they should be. Let's make them the way that they should be. All right, coming up, I'm going to get you set for your fantasy football draft. We don't do fantasy very often, but I figured now, as we sit here in the month of August, it is the perfect time. Justin Fensterman is fantasyguru.com, SiriusXM Fantasy. He's going to join us next year on the Kevin Sheehan Show. Dente sitting in on the Team 980, the Team 980.com, and always free and live on the Odyssey app.